You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We got a couple of off nights in the NBA. We got a switch in the venue as we now move to Indiana with the series tied up one game apiece. Pacers pulled off some of that famous Pacer magic we've seen throughout the NBA playoffs to steal game one. And then the Thunder respond the way they have all playoff long with a smackdown in game two. We're going to talk about that and some of the other storylines floating around the NBA. Joining us, as he does each week, we have our NBA analyst James Hollis right now over the phone. James, it's great to get you back on as we get a couple of days off now in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, man. I was really excited about these finals, right? And I'm still excited. I'm going to still be positive, so let's go.
I think you and I were on the same page, although I want to point out you called your shot. You said Indiana would find a way to steal game one, and boy, did they find a way to steal game one. But I think you and I were on the same page as far as this being a competitive series that may not go very long. I think that was kind of the overall tone, right, when we talk going into the series, that Indiana's going to be game. They simply do not have the firepower, I don't believe, over the course of a seven-game set to match OKC. And we kind of saw that in game two. And you said something to me before we hopped on. It was, it's kind of what we expected, right? Game two was a little bit more of the tone as to what we expected in this series.
I mean, and that's no disrespect to the Pacers, right? I think kudos to their coach and their front office and everyone on that team for they're wringing every last drop they can out of their roster and their play style, them being the Pacers. The team across from them is just better. They're more athletic. They have more depth. Their best player is better than the Pacers' best player. Their second best player is, I don't know. I might take Pascal over Jalen Williams right now, but the point is they're just deeper. They're way more disciplined on defense. And, you know, I know that the old trope is good offense will beat good defense, but, you know, not this time. Not this time at all.
There's just too much depth with this Oklahoma City team. And, James, I keep going back to it. I feel like a broken record in saying this throughout the entire postseason. In my mind, I have diminished the importance of depth 1 through 10 or 1 through 12, knowing that playoff rotation shrink a bit. That was my own doing, right? I diminished that in my mind over the last few years, and this right here is proof that 1 through 10 works. It doesn't matter. It matters. It doesn't matter if we're talking about a team that didn't get there, right? A team like the Celtics, who I believe were the best team front to back. They ran into some injury issues. If it's a team like Cleveland, who gave up a little bit of that depth for a guy like DeAndre Hunter, again, that's something that you and I have talked about at length, at nauseam, over the last couple of months. Depth is more important than I have given it credit for over the last couple of seasons.
I'm going to say that you are actually spot on, and that's what makes the Thunder an outlier. For most teams, yes, you want to have some good regular season depth, anywhere between 8, 10, some teams even 12 guys that you can play regular season, right? They'll come in, play 10 minutes. I call those guys minute eaters. They'll come in, and they won't hurt you. They might not win you a game, but they're there. And then the playoffs come, and most coaches pair their rotation down to about, between 7 and 9. So let's say an 8-man rotation for the playoffs. Sometimes a 7-man rotation because you're playing your best players bigger minutes. And so, no, I'm going to agree that you're normally right. The Thunder are an outlier because they can pull a guy like Wiggins off the bench or, you know, some of the other Jalen Williams off the bench, and those guys can give you a solid 10 or 15 minutes even in the playoffs against the best of the best teams. So that's what makes the Thunder so deadly, and that's why they're probably hoisting that trophy up here in less than a week, because the Pacers just can't simply match their depth, right? The Pacers have a top seven that's really good, and the Thunder have about 8 to 10 that's just as good. And the main thing is offensively. I think if you put them on, just say, hey, you guys, offenses are about equal. The Thunder's defense is just so a level above the Pacers' defense, and it makes the Pacers' offense look inept.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to game two, one thing that cannot happen if Indiana wants a puncher's chance to win this series, you cannot allow three-quarters of the Thunder scoring 30-plus. That simply cannot happen, right? Because going into this matchup, we talked about what Rick Carlisle can do defensively or offensively to try to keep pace against this deadly Thunder defense. But defensively for Indiana, if you're giving up 30-plus a quarter, you have no shot in hell in this series. It's that simple.
And yeah, that's the thing, right? It's almost like the old, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. The Pacers did a great job of not turning the ball over this game. They protected the ball much better, but they didn't hit more threes. And yeah, the defense really slacked, and they let the Thunder offense get on track. And that you just can't. You have to play the margin. Like we all say, the playoffs are about the margins. You have to play near perfect basketball to be a team like the Thunder. And like you know, hey. We don't know. It's not over yet. It's only 1-1. The Pacers actually have already stolen home court advantage. But as of right now, it looks like they are kind of like in the danger zone, right? I think the orange lights are flashing because they did everything they could in game one. They stole it. Game two, they looked totally outmatched. So let's see how game three goes. But, yeah, the Thunder are just deeper, a little more cohesive on defense, and the Pacers have not dealt with the pressure very well.
Again, James Hollis joining us right now as we talk about the NBA Finals series right now outside 1-1 as we shift back to Indiana on Wednesday. I think you just hit the nail right on the head, right? I mean, Indiana did exactly what they needed to do. I don't think anyone thought that the Pacers would steal two games on the road. So what happened? Well, they swiped home court advantage. And I think if you're a Pacer fan, that may be your lone bright spot after what went down in game two. I go back and I look at this, James. Pascal Siakam, who you and I have talked a lot about, was not very efficient in game two. And we're talking about the Eastern Conference MVP. I know you wanted to get a little bit deeper into Pascal Siakam last week. The idea that OKC really rendered him as inefficient as he was. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I think he had seven boards, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, he wasn't even effective on the glass in this game. That's bad news. This guy's got to be able to come through here in the NBA Finals. He has to.
I got it here, right here. He scored 15 points. He missed 8 of his 11 shots. He missed 3 of his 4 three-pointers. And, yes, he did have 7 rebounds. But I believe he had only 2 turnovers. But still, yes, he was a negative 15 on the night. And absolutely right. So what makes the Thunder so lethal to other teams is their defense is on a string. And they make you play in a phone booth, meaning that a guy like Pascal, he likes to play one-on-one. He'll get his guy to the mid-post, and he'll spin. The minute Pascal spins, their defense is coached so well. It's like it's drilled into them. The minute he turns his back on a defender, they will attack from the backside, and now they're crowding him, doubling him. The minute he spins to the lane, that whole defense collapses in on him. They don't give him room to operate one-on-one, and they are absolutely lightning quick at getting back out to their shooters. So they're doing an amazing job of blitzing ball handlers when they least expect it, and they're making the again. It's almost like JV versus varsity sometimes, the way that the defense looks.
James, looking ahead to Game 3. And we go back, we look at game one, we look at game two, and I think it also needs to be noted that Oklahoma City, for the most part, had game one well in hand, right? So Indiana, very fortunate for it to be 1-1. What have you seen from the Pacers that makes you believe that they can actually take a 3-1 lead back to Oklahoma City? Have you seen anything that leads you to believe that they can protect home court in both games?
To be honest, no, from what I've seen. We know that and again, this is where the Thunder this year almost like a cheat code, and to be terrified from the rest of the league because they are kind of head and shoulders above everyone else, even though Denver played them really tight. But as far as the East is concerned, yeah, they're head and shoulders above those guys because I feel like Tyrese Halliburton is not athletic enough to get downhill and get into the lane, right? And that's where their whole offense starts. Guys getting to the teeth of the defense and making the defense rotate. They can't put the Thunder in rotation because everyone on the Thunder can guard. And the screen navigation of guys like Cason Wallace and Lu Dort is impeccable where Tyrese can't get any separation. Nembhard can't get any separation. So they're allowing, yeah, I wish I knew the answer. Tyrese has to play better, and if he's not getting downhill, he has to make shots. Pascal has to be more aggressive. 11 shots just is not enough. And they all have to be more decisive. That's the one thing about the Pacers' offense is that they normally catch, and they either go or they move the ball. So if they let the Thunder grind them down into, you know, a guy just dribbling the ball 15 times, they're not going to have a chance. They got to really move the ball and really trust their offense, and they have to own the space. The Thunder defense is very physical, and they're pushing the Pacers off their spots and out of their. They're not letting them just run free. So they have to match that physicality and really own the space and just run their offense.
What do you think this series looks like as it goes back to Game 5 in OKC? Because we're guaranteed Game 5. So what's it look like in your mind?
I think it'll be 3-1. My fingers. You know what? I'm going to be optimistic again, and it's going to be 2-2, and we're going to go 6. I think I called Thunder and 6 Ridley, but just from what I saw last game, and this is recency bias, the Thunder just looked to have total control, and they pushed the Pacers' offense out. They were starting at basically half court with 13 seconds left on the shot clock every set, and those guys, by game 3 and game 4, the Thunder are going to be even more locked into what the offense is trying to do, and that's when it's really going to grind down. So I think intellectually I know it's going to be 3-1. It's going to be 3-1, and it's just going to be over. It's going to be a short series.
James, let's shift away from the NBA Finals and talk about some of the other news that has trickled out regarding the head coaching vacancy in New York. The last time we had you on, we did talk about Tom Thibodeau. We talked about the Knicks moving in a different direction. And now it was reported earlier today by ESPN's Brian Windhorst that there is mutual interest between the Knicks and Dallas Mavericks head coach Jason Kidd. It's a very big summer, obviously, for the Mavericks. The trade for Anthony Davis and trading Luka takes a little bit of sting out of it, knowing that this team has a number one overall pick and potentially a generational player in Cooper Flagg, who has been presumed the number one pick since the beginning of last season in college basketball. Is that enough to keep Jason Kidd in Dallas? The idea that you have Kyrie Irving coming back, you have Anthony Davis, you have the number one pick. This was a team that was in the top 10 in the Western Conference despite the trade. Nico Harrison has a vision. Maybe Jason Kidd believes in it. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But the current setup in Dallas, is that enough to keep Jason Kidd put? Or would you seriously explore the idea of moving to New York if you were Jason Kidd?
It's so funny. It's Jason Kidd, right? We're not talking one of these top-tier coaches. He's a good coach, but, he's Jason Kidd. So it's funny that this is the type of conversation, not with me and you, but like a national level, because we all know what's at stake here. There's the Knicks rumors about Giannis. Like you just said, there's been major upheaval in Dallas already. So, how's this future going to look? And it's interesting. If I was the Knicks, my one thing about the Knicks is we've known for years they've been kind of a team of a lot of drama, not a lot of success. And a big, Leon Rose came in, and they really stabilized that front office, and things seemed to be heading a different direction. Well, here we are, another summer of drama for the Knicks. After one of the most successful seasons in, two decades, we are questioning how good they really are, and now they're in a coaching search. So that's kind of like it's troublesome if I'm a Knicks fan, right, after such a great momentum the last few years. Jason Kidd, another dramatic kind of coach. We know how he left the Bucks. We know some of the things going on right now in Dallas. I'm not a big fan of retreads, and while he is a good coach, I think there are many more young, forward-minded coaches out there, but it all comes down, you're on the New York Crucible, right? That's not a normal franchise, same like the Lakers. No matter how good of a coach it is, the lights and just the pressure to win there are something that's just astronomical. Kidd is actually ex-Nick, as we all know, so he'd probably be a good fit there, and he's a name. They want a name in New York, so obviously they should try that. It's not unheard of. Doc Rivers left the Celtics. I think he went to the Clippers, and it was actually like a trade. I think the Clippers had sent back a couple picks for that back in 2010 or 11 when he left the Celtics, or whenever that was, 13, 14. So it's not unprecedented. Sure, I want to see it because I don't think they're going to – I think the Knicks might be spiraling out where they had this great upward trajectory. I don't know if this move is going to do it, and the dramatics are kicking back in. So I'm here for the drama. Give me the popcorn. Send Jason Kidd to New York.
This is why I was so against firing Tom Thibodeau. The idea that there is mutual interest. I agree with everything you said about Jason Kidd. I think you hit it right on the head. We're not talking about a legendary coach. We're talking about a good coach, right? The fact that you get rid of someone that posted 450-plus win seasons, someone that passed Pat Riley on your all-time wins list, someone that had you in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you didn't have a surefire guy that you looked at and said, that's who we want to replace him with, to me, it makes dismissing Thibodeau and the timing of it even worse, James.
I agree. And we know the best franchise is about stability, right? And it's about the front office and the coach being in lockstep. And so even if the front office and Tibbs weren't in entire lockstep, they've had, 4 or 5 years together, and they've found some success. That's where I think Leon Rose had to go out, maybe find some assistant coaches that they that everyone can jibe with to maybe freshen up the offense, right, to diversify things a bit. But just to fire him after such a, you know, there were two wins away from the finals, and you fire him. That definitely seems like a knee-jerk reaction, and it's going to have, a ripple effect for the next season. The players loved him. You know, Brunson spoke very highly of him, and we know maybe him and Cat have something, but when your superstar loves him, it's just a very puzzling move to me, too. I get it. All the chatter, we heard it. We heard what fans said, but this shouldn't be about the fans. It's about building something long-lasting and building something that can withstand the test of some things. And Tibbs was that coach, I think, for that team, and we're not going to see it again.
James, before I let you go, I do want to talk about the trade rumors popping up with Kevin Durant. Obviously, he is going to have a new home this offseason. One of the most logical places, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I just sit and I look at things, the most logical place for him to go right now would have to be the San Antonio Spurs, right? Can you think of a better place for him to go, a more logical place than San Antonio?
I would rather see him on a team like the Rockets. They're a little bit further in their development. And he is near the, you know, he's in the twilight at his age and the wear and tear on him. So I've seen him too, like Rockets, but sure, the Spurs be nice. My one issue is that, you know, Wemby's going into year three. He missed a big chunk of this season. I think sometimes we need to let things marinate just a little bit more, right? I get it. We want to see him in the playoffs. We want to see him find success. But I don't know if we need to fast track it to the point where they bring in a mercenary like Kevin Durant for a season or two. Because Kevin Durant's going to be gone in a season or two. And then what? Right? Let's say they even get to the Western Conference Finals and they make some noise in the playoffs. Kevin Durant's gone, and so what do you do? What do you do next? Right. Well, right now they have a lot of some good young players. Vassell, obviously, Stephon Castle is going to be there. They got our guy De'Aaron Fox. Like, they're set up to really kind of build something. I don't know if they need to try to fast track it with Kevin Durant. That's just me as a holistic team kind of guy.
I agree with you. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. You just mentioned all the pieces they have. Let's not forget they got the number two pick. Right, so you're going to get your pick. Do you want Dylan Harper or do you want Ace Bailey? You're going to get one of those two. We know that for a fact. And you have 14. If you take your time with this and you do things the way the San Antonio Spurs have done things with the luck that you have had in the lottery and pulling in a De'Aaron Fox to run your point for the next 5, 6, 7 years, James, this could be a very scary team if they handle this draft properly.
And you know what? Look at the Thunder, right? The Thunder had Shea 2 or 3 years ago. And he was playing well, and you know they had Al Horford, and they actually sat out because they didn't want to win too many games. And look how it turned out. So I think this should be a slow roast versus the microwave thing in San Antonio. And while it'd be fun to see Kevin Durant, I don't know if for the franchise's well being, that's the best idea. So me and you are in lockstep there.
He's James Holis again, kind enough to join us to talk NBA basketball. James, I always appreciate the conversations. I always look forward to it. We got to make sure we do another one this week, especially being right in the heart of the NBA finals and knowing that we don't get any games over Saturday and Sunday. We got to make sure we connect again this week if you're up for it.
Let's really wait. Let's try to get in this Thursday if we can, right?
Yeah.
So we can react to the game three. That'd be fun. So just let me know, and I'm always here for you, man. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, James. Thanks again. We've got to pause one more time. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of the show when we return. It's Drive Time Sports live from the Sutherland Studios.